I am not a fan of the way that crafts have been appropriated, continue to be appropriated, without at least giving it their due inspiration. I think the one way we can begin to make a difference is at least credit where the inspiration came from.
You're listening to Made Better, a show exploring the power of creating and consuming more consciously for a healthier planet and perspective. I'm your host, Susanna Jaffa. Each episode, I connect with inspiring individuals to chat about the impact of what we wear, from clothing to cosmetics, and discuss how we can all journey to making better choices and why it matters. Join us each week as we shift the narrative around consumption, one conversation at a time. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. How are you doing? I hope 2022 has gotten off to a great start for you and you're feeling good. For me, it's already been a bit of a roller coaster. We're working on lots of really exciting projects at Zerin. And of course, this podcast is definitely keeping me busy. In today's episode, we're exploring our clothing's connection to the natural world. It's funny, we don't always remember that many of the clothes and commonly worn materials we wear every day come from the earth. Like cotton, derived from fibers surrounding the seeds of cotton plants, to linen, a yarn made from the flax plant. It's also easy to forget that what we wear is most often made by human hands, the results of hours of manual work and skill. Making clothes isn't easy. For that reason, the way we produce and consume fashion has a massive impact on our planet, from the depletion of the Earth's natural resources to the exploitation of labor around the world. It's something that the slow fashion movement, which has a philosophy rooted in creating less but better, seeks to remedy. But what does it look like to build a fashion business that actually embodies these values? I'm going to be chatting all about it to this week's guest, Mahima Gujral. She's the founder of conscious fashion label Sui, which means needle in Hindi. Their goal is to craft clothing with a green heart and to spread awareness of conscious fashion that is versatile, has a minimal impact, and treats its makers like family. Hey, Mahima, and welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's really good to be here.
I would love to hear, first off, about you, to introduce yourself and your personal journey to getting into the sustainable fashion space and founding Sui.
So quickly, a little bit about me. I'm Mahima. I am the founder of Sui, and I also like to call myself a slow fashion advocate. I am born and brought up in New Delhi, India, but currently based in Singapore, and I operate the business between two countries, being India and Singapore. A little about me, apart from what I do, is also that I'm a huge nature lover. I love going out in nature, going on hikes, exploring, taking inspiration from nature. I love traveling, and I just love being curious about our world, really. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Amazing. And tell me more about how you actually came to founding the label and the journey that you went on, maybe personally and professionally, because yeah. I understand that you've studied fashion design as well here in Singapore. So I'd love to know more about what sparked all of it.
Sure. I think a lot of where I come from and where I am today is credited to my influences. And I believe a lot in connecting the dots. And I think as we grow older, we look back and we're like, okay, now that makes sense. So I come from a very humble upbringing. Like I said, I grew up in Delhi and I was brought up by two entrepreneurs in my family, my father and my mother. That itself, I think from a young age, had an influence on me. But my maternal side of the family operates a fashion business that started in the 1960s because my grandmother loved creating clothes and she wanted to sort of convert that into a small business. So she opened up a tailoring business. Of course, it went on to become a much larger business, making Indian fusion and Indian traditional clothing, which was taken over by my mother. So when I was younger, being around textiles, being around clothing, being around the makers was a big part of who I was. Of course, back then I didn't realize what this would mean, but it was influencing me in ways that I wouldn't understand till much later on. I always knew where my Indian clothes came from. It was the only place that I wore my saris, my lehengas, my suits from. And fast forward to when I turned 18, somehow, though it wasn't the plan, I decided to study fashion. It made all the sense because there was a running business in the family that I could look into or aspire to be something within the industry. My goal was really to work within the marketing and branding space because I used to love storytelling till date. If you know me, you know that telling a good story about your clothes is something that I truly stand for. And that's when I came to Singapore and I actually studied fashion management, wanting to become more known about the workings of the industry with the hope back then to work for a luxury brand or a fast fashion brand, you know, operate their marketing department. And that really took me on a journey where I worked with Dior for a couple of years within their PR space in India. But I think while I was at Dior, I was always searching for a stronger connect with the product. I always felt like I was far away from the story that we were trying to tell. And that led me to wanting to study my master's. And that is where things started changing for me a lot. From entering my master's in 2016, hoping that I'd end up at any big brand and that would be the dream, right? While you're in the fashion industry back then. Right at the tail end, we had a very small little course on sustainability in fashion, something that I don't think was taught in universities back then. I did not learn it while I was studying in LaSalle for 4 years. And that is where I understood more about what sustainability really meant. And that is where I got introduced to two core things that I feel like changed my journey. And that was the movie True Cost and Fashion Revolution. I think being impacted by that really took me questioning who I was and how I was consuming. And I think as a 20-something, I was an ardent fashion shopper, consuming clothes like crazy, buying and not wearing enough, not knowing what was in my wardrobe. So having this revelation, having this understanding of this whole question that said, who made my clothes? Where are your clothes coming from? Left me in a space like with a big question mark in my mind where I look back and I said, hey, I grew up knowing where a significant amount of my clothes came from. I saw my family run a business respecting the makers. And here I am creating a wardrobe, not knowing, not caring, wanting to enter an industry, not thinking about this while it makes such a big part of the business, right? Fashion is not just about marketing or branding, but fashion, a large part of fashion is what makes fashion, where it comes from. And that is what made me really question my relationship with my clothes. And that took me on a very interesting journey in 2017, from learning how to consume better, which was a new thing for me, from understanding what were sustainable fabrics, what were brands doing out there, who were the people within the space. And I joined Fashion Revolution as a volunteer and I met Laura back then. And I think all of that sort of connected to what took me to the next step. I think a couple of months down the line, I realized that there were two things. There were amazing brands that needed support, that needed a bigger platform. And secondly, the mindset behind sustainable clothing was very weak. People didn't believe that sustainable clothing could be wearable, could be something that they could introduce and wear on a day-to-day basis. And I wanted to change that. And I thought, why not start a brand within my mom's business? Because it's something that I'm going to try out. And create a small capsule collection and see how that goes. And I hired a master and tailor who still works with us today. And today he manages a team, tied up with two vendors for hemp and organic cotton, started understanding more about their supply chain and creating designs that were inspired by nature, could tell a story, could sort of give back to nature in that way. And I founded Sui, initially saying I will launch this and see how it goes, with the hope to sort of connect the gap between nature and fashion. And I guess it just evolved into much more for me personally and of course as a business as well.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing. I think we all have our own journey into mindful consumption. And I always find that everyone has similarities in their journeys. And I think it's sort of that wake up moment, that pivotal moment where you start questioning more about how and why we consume and all the things that we've subconsciously absorbed into our shopping habits. I think that really rings true across so many individuals. And I think it's natural because we are all coming into the fashion space as consumers. And how has it been like growing Sui? Right now, you have been running the business for a few years, and I know that you are so inspired by the natural world, and it features so much in your designs. And your tagline for the brand is clothing crafted with a green heart. I'd love you to share a bit more about the green heart and what that means at the core of your brand, because I know that it relates to respect for nature, but also inspiration from the natural world. How has that influenced all of your journey?
I would say I have an ever-evolving relationship with nature, and I'm constantly learning. I think when I was younger, thanks to my father, who always made me understand that even traveling or being in a space is not about soaking in the city, but really going out there and enjoying what's out there, like the scenery, soaking in what nature has to give you, either through photography, either through any other creative force. So I used to write, and I started to realize that my poetry would always use nature as a muse. And I always seemed to find a lot of peace and inspiration, I guess, from nature. It's one of the ways I made it through this pandemic, really, through going for walks and hikes within Singapore. It's something that I feel really helped me mentally. But I think what I have grown to sort of learn is, of course, that there is so much more that nature can teach us. And at the same time, how we're so connected to it. And that was something I don't think I realized earlier on when I started Sui. But in a way, that connection is so important, right? And whatever we do and whatever steps we take, it's important to sort of respect that. And I think the concept of the green heart sort of wanted to stand for that and hold as like the base of everything that we do. A green heart essentially means a heart that, of course, respects nature, but nature also means all of us, so respects people and respects your community. You know, customers who end up consuming your clothes, they're all a part of this entire value system at the end of the day. So that's why when we say we craft clothing with a green heart, it's very important for us to keep this in our mind. The first way that we've always done this is making sure that nature has been our muse. Initially, it was always about travel for us, but I think soon enough, we realize that nature is really all around us. It could be just memories within your hometown that if you grew up in a garden space, then that is something that you can use in your designs. So we really wanted to make sure that our clothes stood for that story. So we've obviously taken inspiration from travel that's inspired us to summer stories and summer nostalgia, like the dress that you're wearing that has the bougainvillea on it. And at the same time, making sure that respecting nature is a huge pillar for us. So that means that the fabrics that we use, the dyes that we use, the way that we create is respecting that. What that would mean is, of course, that we're using sustainable fabrics. We try to work with plant-based dyes. If not, then as a free dye, so they have a minimal impact. And at the same time, making sure that we consume without creating immense amount of waste. So producing in smaller quantities, saving whatever that scrap that comes out. So I think it's been an ever-evolving relationship, and I'm trying to now constantly explore that connection that we share with nature. And interestingly, this pandemic has pushed me more and more to learn about what nature has to give us and what is all around us. So we started doing nature walks for Sui, which was really interesting, just to give it an extension and to really learn about, you know, what is native to Singapore in terms of the trees and the flowers and the plants. So yeah, I think it's just been a very rewarding and learning experience having nature as one of our, not only our muses, but also understanding how it's really a part of all of us and not really something that's separate in a way as well.
Yeah, I think that is really amazing observations. I think that on your side as well, you really bring to the fore your team of creators who you call your thread spellers. And I understand that you are really passionate about sharing their work and also viewpoint as well in terms of creating a conscious fashion label, creating consciously made garments and what that looks like. How has that experience been to you? Because that level of transparency is not something that all brands aspire to. It's transparency. We need more in the industry. How has that been like for the growth of your label and your artisans and thread spellers? And I know that you're working with a lot of different suppliers for your fabrics. And how has that experience been like for you? I've always admired it from afar, and we work closely together as well, but I've always admired the way that you really champion the people behind the clothing, and you're placing such a great focus on both the environmental impact of your clothing production and minimizing it as much as possible, while really uplifting the skill and the work of your team.
Yeah, I think the first thing that we wanted to make sure Sui would stand for, very rightly so, because like I said, the makers were a big influence in my life when I was younger. It had to be the people focused, and that had to begin with where we were gonna make our clothes. It's a very difficult decision to agree to do it within your own space because it comes with a much larger cost. I was privileged enough, I would say, to have a family business that would give me the base and understanding of how production would operate. I think without that, I would have been nowhere. It is very, very difficult to start up from scratch. Having that knowledge with me and having the support of my mother, who was an entrepreneur, helped me set up a space that would then build on to be a larger workshop for Sui. But it was important for us to make sure that they were in a safe space, they were highlighted, and they were told, and that they were as important to our business as any one of us. They were part of this team, because at the end of the day, without them, our creations, our ideas would never have a form. Without them, there would be no clothes at the end of the day. So it was very important for us to respect that and to be able to share that as much as possible. And because there was always a base understanding of why that mattered, it was much easier for us to sort of set that up and then grow it from there on. I think I'd have to credit an amazing team that works with me in Delhi. They're a small team of young firefighters, I would say, who really helped me nurture this further, because I haven't been able to go back to really meet them for the past 2 years. But it has been very rewarding, because we like to share feedback with our thread spellers. We like to tell them what our customers are saying. We like to let them know when they do something wrong, because it's important to sort of make them understand their relationship with this space as well. And also hear from them and see their understanding of our fabrics and our designs. We recently did a video where we asked them to talk about what they'd learned or what they wanted to share about clothing that we've just released. They were talking so fondly about how beautiful the fabrics were and, you know, how they'd loved the touch of the fabrics. It was very rewarding for us. So I think it was very important for us to make sure that this would remain a core for us. And that would also mean that tomorrow, if we ever go out and outsource a piece of art because we needed to do so because of growth or any other reason, the same values and philosophy would have to carry forward. And that is the same way I think we've built our relationships with our vendors. Again, very important to use the word relationship, because when you're getting into sourcing with anyone and you're wanting to build your business, they're supporting you and then back on you're supporting them, and you're working together to make sure that there is a larger space for sustainable fabrics, right? And artisan-run fabrics. So it's very important for us to make sure that that relationship is strengthened and is looked at as a long-term aspect. And at the same time, questioning them if they don't give us enough information. So I guess it's easier with artisan vendors because they are in such an interesting and open space to understand who's making what and who's doing what and how things are done. But it's always harder if you're working with even, say, an organic cotton vendor or someone who works within Tencel. So what we wanted to always do was ask all the right questions and then be honest with our customers about the information that we have in hand, so that we're sharing what we know, but also telling them that, hey, you know, there are always challenges here and there. It's just been very rewarding. And I would also always like to credit my team, because they've helped me hold fort whenever, and especially through this pandemic, to sort of make sure that we maintain that.
For sure. It can't be easy to look for new fabrics and everything when you're not there. Because I know previously, pre-pandemic, you would be traveling, you would be with the team, you'd be visiting suppliers, visiting artisan communities, visiting places to find new dyes and new techniques. And I think it's amazing that you've been able to kind of grow the business during this time while nurturing everyone's perspectives, because I think that too often the people who make our clothes and the behind the scenes is not publicized enough. And I think this is one of the reasons why there's a disconnect between consumers and the fashion supply chain, because it's just heavily opaque as it is now. Yeah. And I think what you're trying to do with Sui, what I know that a lot of people believe about your brand, is that you are lifting the veil on all of that and you are bringing it to the forefront and normalizing that. And I think that that's really a model for future fashion brands, because at the end of the day, there's humans behind everything that we make. And
exactly.
Yeah. And I'm always inspired by seeing those stories, because it just adds so much more value to the pieces that you decide to bring into your life, because they carry other people's stories. And you touched upon actually the fabrics that you're working with, like organic cotton, tencel. I'd love to know more about your experiences sourcing more eco-friendly fabrics and how that has been for you. Challenging things that you've learned about, and are there any fabrics that you're looking forward to working with, and maybe what you've learned about the fabric sourcing experience, because I think too few of us understand that so many of the fibers that we wear come from nature, come from the soil, and there's so much nuance. I'd love to know your experience on it.
Sure. It's been a learning journey, and I really feel like we don't credit enough where and how our fabrics are made. So I guess, like you said, it's very important to realize that probably most of the fabrics, right, apart from polyester, come from nature, be it cotton, be it hemp, be it linen. They all start at a farm. They're looked after by farmers, and that is what begins their journey. So I think it's been an interesting learning experience. And also, there is still so much vagueness within the industry, and it's so much harder still to go to the farmer space to really make your way to understand the entire supply chain. So I would say that that's still one of the biggest challenges, which is changing. But I still believe that there is so much more that we all can learn as businesses, as designers, as entrepreneurs, if we just really start from the source of it all. Because it is true that if you understand the way something is grown, you can begin to reduce its impact right from there on. But a lot of the fabrics that we work with, such as hemp, tencel, organic cotton, they're all fabrics that I'm continuing to learn a lot more about. I think one of the new fabrics that I've been very, very excited to work with is Kala cotton. It's actually an indigenous cotton that's very, very ancient to India. And something that I learned was that much earlier on, before the Industrial Revolution, or much before probably independence, the way cotton was grown was very, very different. And then because of industrialization, the way cotton was grown changed a lot more. So what Kala cotton really looks at as an ancient way of growing cotton, it's completely rain-fed, it's organic by nature, and it sort of respects those age-old practices of how cotton is grown. And then it is spun and made into fabric. So it is a very, very interesting and sustainable cotton that grows in Kutch in India. So I've been very excited to introduce this and to more and more share its story, and also talk about the communities that are sort of working in terms of a small little village economy to grow this, to make this. It's a much, you know, because it's grown in the same space and then spun and then woven around the same space, probably dyed in the same areas. So it makes it very interesting and sustainable and localized at the same time. So this is a fabric that I'm very excited to work with a lot more, to introduce a lot more, and see where it takes us. I think one of the things that I'm always excited to see is how these age-old traditions can grow to become a part of the future of fashion as well. How can we learn from them? And I guess it also takes you to regenerative practices. It's sort of similar, and you know, a lot of people are talking about that as well. So I would say this is something that I'm excited about exploring further. But apart from that, another fabric that I truly love is hand-spun, hand-woven organic cotton, which is what I'm wearing, which is what I think we began advocating for a long time ago. What I love about handmade fabric, I would say, is the fact that it comes with such a beautiful story, but also a minimal impact as well. The fact that it's completely handmade makes it so much more easier on our environment in terms of the emissions that it creates. So yeah, I think there is a lot to learn about the story of fabrics as well. And it is something that I feel like we're constantly looking into.
And for those of you who are watching us on video, actually, this dress is made from Carla Cotton. And yes. It's just such a beautiful texture in a fabric. And I think that it's just testament to the ancient old techniques that actually, it's kind of like, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Like, how can you work with nature in the most seamless, simple way that doesn't disrupt its natural processes? Because a lot of cotton production now is heavily fueled with pesticides. I mean, that's the difference between everyday cotton and organic cotton.
Yeah.
And I think that, but the challenge with that is actually the fact that a lot of consumers are being encouraged to look for certifications and look for, you know, GOTS, look for, and that's like a sustainable standard. But again, there's nuance to that, because not all sustainably made fabrics or more eco-conscious options are certified. How are you, do you plan on communicating that? Because I know that it's going to be education, and but I'm hearing more and more as consumers are looking to identify what options are out there, then it's like, but wait a minute, is this actually sustainable because it's not got this stamp on it?
Yeah, as much as I guess GOTS certified is something that we all know, and there are a bunch of other certifications that do exist, if you're working within the artisan space, it's much harder for you to sort of work with that. So even if the cotton itself is organic or GOTS certified, the entire process is still woven and made in a workshop, which may not be certified by GOTS, but you know for sure they're an NGO working and paying them fairly, and it's something that you've seen, you know, gone, visited, learned from them. So I think it's important to be as transparent as you can. That's what we try to do. Wherever we do have certifications, we share that. It's important to let customers know. I think where it's important to make sure there are certifications is if you're working with machine-made fabrics. So definitely if it's knits, if it's stencil, it's important to check with the factories as to what sort of certifications they have, because that sort of puts you at ease saying, okay, you know, they've just been audited. How recent is that certificate? Are they renewing it? So these are things that are important. And we make sure that we do that for that space. But at the same time, it is much harder. And I think the only way that you can tackle that is constantly sharing information, being as transparent as you can, because the artisan space itself is still a work in progress within India. And I feel like not just India, but probably wherever all of these amazing artisans exist, it's still a work in progress. And no such recognizable certifications exist at the current moment. And if they do, they could be a lot more expensive. So for example, even fair trade certification for that matter, if I were to get my factory certified for fair trade, it's not something that's affordable as a small business. So I guess even though that would be ideal, because it sort of helps you just say, okay, yeah, this kind of makes it easier for us to start marketing, I guess as a small business, you go ahead and you try the other route, which is communication and being as transparent, as honest as you can with your customers.
Yeah, and I think with limited resources, you have to decide where is best to invest. Exactly. And I think that it's far more worthwhile for a small business to invest in your team, the capabilities that you have around you, and growing the education side rather than going down that route. And I think that it's conversations like that that we have with readers, with customers as well, to help people understand that it's not black and white. There's shades of gray when it comes to materials and fabrics, and it's an ever-evolving space.
Yeah.
With that as well, one of the other challenges that comes with sustainable fabrics and ethical production is price point. And I think that with the fact that artisanal fashion is very unique and labor intensive, more labor intensive than machine made fabrics, there's obviously a price point difference between those garments and, you know, an everyday high street store. How have you shared more about the value of your clothing? And I know that within the sustainable fashion space, a lot of entrepreneurs face challenges with price points, especially as their smaller businesses not producing volume. And how have you encountered and tackled that? What queries have you come across, and how are you communicating the value of handcrafted, sustainably made clothing and the artisanal techniques in general?
This is a tough one always, I think, as businesses, as entrepreneurs, we're at a constant battle. I'm trying to make sure that we're pricing ourselves well enough, but at the same time, understanding that you cannot compete with anything that's quoted as affordable today because of fast fashion. But I think we're in a good place today. And I would say that we probably weren't there in 2018, 2019, where there has been a growing understanding of the fact that if something is made better, if something is created better, then it does come with a price. So I think that understanding has helped us sort of get somewhere for sure. But I think the only other way to tackle this is be as transparent and honest as you can with your customers. Talk about what you are working with. Talk about how you are pricing your garments, if that's something that you're comfortable with. Talk about the fact that you are not actually probably adding margins as much as a fast fashion business does. I think the industry norm is normally 5x, 6x, which is not something a sustainable business will be able to do, you know, because it's not going to be something that they can sort of sustain with at the end of the day. And most importantly, speak about why something is more expensive, why it comes with a cost, because at the end of the day, if you are creating ethically, it means that you're paying your tailors, your embroiderers a fair wage. You are giving back. You're making sure that they are able to take back a healthy salary to be able to grow their lives. That's important. At the same time, if you're working with artisan communities that are paying their workers and their weavers a fair wage, you are paying the price for it, because it's sort of going back and helping the growth of the community. It's going back and helping the growth of that certain craft. So I think helping customers, helping your community understand that value, that story, is the only way that you can try your best to tackle it, while at the same time making them understand how if you buy better, your clothes last longer. There is so much more versatility within the clothing that sustainable businesses create. There's always a thought behind the design. You know, you're always making something that's a lot more timeless, which means that even after 3 to 4 years, if you're bored of it and you want to swap it, you want to pass it over to someone, it's still going to be in an impeccable condition. It's still going to be in a great condition. And there are so many various ways that you can wear it. So in that sense, spending $50 on a dress that you may wear one time versus spending probably double the amount or a little more on a really nice, well-crafted dress, I guess is a much better investment if you look at, and you end up buying less and you end up buying more mindfully. I think communicating that is the only way that we can sort of help push this conversation forward. Then again, you'll always have many who cannot afford sustainable clothing. And I think we have to just understand that and just keep moving forward, right? At the end of the day, the hope is that the industry moves to a better way of producing. And I don't really think it would affect price points that crazily, but I do hope that it helps grow awareness further.
That it becomes more normalized.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I think on the one hand, well, like the biggest crux of it really is the fact that our notions of value when it comes to fashion consumption have been shaped by the fast fashion industry, have been shaped by the world's biggest brands. And I think that with that comes a disconnect between, as we were mentioning, what it actually takes to create stuff, to create clothing, the cost, because what fast fashion and what brands that are producing at, you know, record cheap prices, they don't account for the cost to the environment, to people. And those costs are really, you know, doing less harm and doing more good, paying living wages to your workers so that, like you said, that they can thrive and build lives themselves and aren't trapped in a system that exploits them, and creating clothes that don't harm the environment, pollute rivers with toxic dyes. You know, there's all of that, which is inextricably linked to the climate crisis now and climate change. Yeah. And it's one of those things that I think that cost per wear, like kind of what you've been mentioning, is so powerful because it makes you rethink what value actually is. And it's something that I now have trained myself to think a lot more of and to share more with through Zared and the information we put out as well, because it's a really powerful way of flipping your thinking into what value really is and choosing pieces that will grow with you. Exactly. And not be afraid of sort of that initial sticker shock of, oh, this garment costs more initially because it's going to be more cost effective for me to wear something many, many times and spend slightly more price point wise than buying a few cheaper goods that I get tired of and get forgotten at the back of my wardrobe, cluttering up my life. And to your point, yes, you know, I think it's very important to share that not everyone can afford sustainably made clothing. It is a slightly higher price point, sometimes a significantly higher price point, and barriers in terms of accessibility. There's barriers in terms of size and access. And it's really important that the sustainable fashion industry and brands acknowledge that and work to improve, while at the same time acknowledging that it is going to be a journey. To that point, there's so many more alternatives that are out there, from thrifting to swapping. You know, you can actually find sustainably made garments, you know, on secondhand platforms too sometimes. I've been on a carousel recently and have got some great, you know, Reformation, Everlane pieces that I've bookmarked, because sometimes it's a little bit more, well, I like to find things secondhand, but sometimes new, some of them are a little bit pricey for me too. So there's those options that are out there for everyone. And I think that it's exploring those and feeling empowered that you do have a choice, but coupling that with learning more about how things actually work, because I think that that knowledge is power, right?
Absolutely. I really feel like fast fashion, and it's such a, if you look back, it's not really that old concept. I mean, we're really talking about brands that got popular 20 years ago, probably even later on in Asia. And it's I think what a lot of people are not being able to see is that it's all a numbers game for them. It's all really just making sure they get the best cost, the best price for their garments, and nothing else matters. And I really just wish more and more people sort of understand that the only thing that probably matters is how much they're producing and how that helps them sort of make a better profit versus everything else that should be a part of building your business, I guess.
Yeah, totally. And my hope actually for this year, this coming year, is for more of that education to be kind of democratized and more people to realize how things are really working. And I think social media is a powerful tool for that. There's so many activists, campaigners, and just everyday individuals who are getting more curious about how things actually work. It's kind of like fashion is a few years, you know, behind the food industry in that respect, where you're considering more about what goes in your body, ingredients, what you're actually eating. Clothing is a little bit later, I think, because it's once removed. It's going on the surface of your body versus inside. Again, we have different notions of value between, you know, diet and the wearing of clothes. So I'm really excited to see how it evolves. Yeah, speaking of fast fashion brands and artisanal craft, I think this is an important point to make and to explore, because I know that one of the reasons why artisanal craft can be devalued is because of the appropriation of traditional textiles in mainstream fast fashion. That's, you know, that could be anything from lifting print and not crediting an original source. It could be reports luxury brands actually outsourcing the creation of artisan-based collections to countries and not crediting and not actually putting a spotlight on the makers. It can look like so many things. And I'd love to know your thoughts on this, because I know that upholding traditional artisanal crafts and putting your workers at the front of what you do is so important. What are your thoughts on this and how the industry can do better?
I am not a fan of the way that crafts have been appropriated, continue to be appropriated, without at least giving it their due inspiration. I think the one way we can begin to make a difference is at least credit where the inspiration came from. There are so many examples today of various different crafts which have been created using machine-made techniques, digital prints, machine printing, that continues to devalue the true craft, the true skill, the true story behind many of these crafts. Because if you digital print versus look at a hand block print, there is so much difference between not just the way that it's done, but the story that it shares, the history that it holds. So I really feel like we have to at least get to a point where we can give credit where credit is due, because at least in that sense, we'd be able to educate customers and help them understand where these inspirations are coming from. But that being said, I really feel like we have so much more learning to do about traditional textiles, about craft and why it matters. Coming from India, I am very, very passionate about this, growing to be a lot more passionate. I wouldn't say I grew up being very passionate about this. It's just something that I grew curious about and I wanted to bring it forward for Sui. And I saw so many benefits to it. I think one of the things to always remember is that the arts and crafts industry in India or in other places within Asia as well is very, very old in terms of its traditions. India used to have a thriving textiles industry long before independence. A lot of that was taken away from us. A lot of that was broken into and really devalued because of man-made fabrics, because of fast fashion. What has been important to me is really finding a way to bring that back. I think finding a way to make people understand that there is so much more opportunity if you begin to empower this space, because not only will it help localize so much, not only will it help the craft grow, but the environmental benefits of it all are amazing. So I really think that what we really try to do from our side is find ways that we can make customers understand this while we still learn more and more. I think I'm constantly learning about the history of textiles, and it really baffles you to understand what a thriving industry existed and where we are today. And that is why you realize that it's important for you to support that and find ways that it can be further supported, because what is happening now is that the younger generation does not want to take over these crafts because of the fact that there is more opportunity in the cities. There is more opportunity in other spaces, because that's what the world sort of shows you. But what you want to be able to do is give them opportunity to thrive within their community so that there is no need for them to go to the cities. They can just build a safe, healthy, sustainable livelihood within their community as well. So I think I definitely feel like we need to find a way to tell these stories so that customers do understand what it means when any fast fashion business mimics an age-old technique which has been worked on with a lot of skill, a lot of hard work, which at the end of the day, if done the right way, has a much lower environmental impact. And if we take that...
One of the most examples was the H&M Sabyasachi collab. Yeah. And I know that we discussed this, and I know that it ruffled a lot of feathers within the artisan industry in India and communities and organizations that work to promote that, because a lot of the collection was machine made, although it was claimed to be uplifting the artisanal community and traditional Indian craft. The irony was that it was actually not made by artisan communities at all. And I think that while giving access to the look of those kind of textiles, block printing, you know, et cetera, I think that it was disappointing for a lot of people to see, you know, such an incredible designer. Number one, you know, there's a reasoning behind collaborating with a company like H&M, but also I think just what he had always stood for and still stands for, because there is nuance to it. And I tried to see both sides, but what he stood for was always that upholding of craft, that luxury textile, that aspiration of what could come from India and how it could look internationally. And I think that quite a marked event for me, because it was one of the first times that such a big international fast fashion brand had really collaborated, a designer renowned for his textiles and
his.
A lot of people in our community, we all discussed this. And I think that it's just one of those things where you see both sides, but it's still a big question mark for me, you know?
Exactly. I think for me, you said a good point where it definitely helped put India on the map. And I think that was the argument that, hey, but he put India on the map. I agree that Indian designers have not really had the opportunity to reach a global scale as yet. And this creates an amazing opportunity because a brand like H&M collaborates with you and takes you all over the world. You know, you're in so many different stores. But for me, the problem definitely lied with the fact that, I guess at one point you are standing for the artisans and creating Indian textiles, and you go ahead and you support every aspect of what fast fashion stands for. And one of the reasons I think he couldn't pull out of it was because it was binded contract in 2019. What I really hoped was just a lot more education behind it. Again, if there was inspiration taken from craft, then how could you have used that to sort of take that to the H&M consumer, regardless of whether you had machine made it, found a way to sort of talk about that in your marketing campaigns. That was a large opportunity to show India to the world, to show our crafts to the world, even if it was inspired by it. Let's take it at that and say, it didn't make sense to work with actual crafts because scale-wise, it would have been problematic.
Well, it would have cost more.
Yeah, and it would have cost more. Mm. Or use the conscious collection for H&M and sort of introduce textiles and crafts in some way. I think there were various ways that this could have been done. But then I think the only way that it was looked at as how could it be made more accessible.
I think that's a whole other podcast to talk
Absolutely.
About. Yeah, I think it just goes to show that there's so much evolving in this space, and there's certainly better ways that mainstream brands can promote artisanal textiles in a meaningful
Absolutely.
Way, in a way that doesn't,
Absolutely.
You know, strip it of its origins, of its provenance, of its actual value.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I think one positive thing that did come out of this entire chapter that took place was the fact that many people spoke up as to why they didn't believe this to be right, and that just showed me so much hope. And that's where I left it. I said that there are two sides to the story, but the fact that so many more people have spoken up, it just shows that there is hope that we are moving in the right direction, and that is a very good feeling to have.
Totally. And to end on a note of hope for the future, then I'd love to know what Made Better means to you.
Made Better for me is a world where we create thoughtfully and a world where we care for where our things come from and how we make them.
Amazing. I'm so inspired by this conversation. It's given me so many things to go away and think about. And I can't wait for more people to hear all of the amazing things that you're working on next year, especially Carla Cotton. I'm really interested to watch your journey with that. And I know it's such an amazing textile because I'm wearing it. And can't wait for more of the world to see it through the lens of your label.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to Made Better. If you enjoyed this episode, please help us spread the word. Share it on social media, with friends, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more people find us. You can also read show notes to this podcast over on our website, Zerin.com. Zerin is a marketplace and media platform connecting you with independent, sustainable brands and content empowering you to consume more mindfully. You can also follow us on Instagram at Zerin_com, and you can find me there too, at Susanna Jeffer.